What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be talking about a win again. We're going to be talking about a couple losses again, but we're also going to be talking about some trades. You know, it's only December, about to be January. The trade deadline isn't really close, but it's not too far away either, so you got to start thinking about that. So we're going to talk about some trade rumors involving Kyle Kuzma. And then we're going to talk about some bigger picture things. Bilal, and it's really hot December. Alex Starr's improved 3-point shooting. We're going to talk about the tank standings and kind of go from there. So, look, the first thing that I want to touch on is the Wizards' win against the Hornets, their second win over Charlotte in the last week at that point. A 113 to 110 victory, a little bit different than the first one, that was 123 to 114, because it was closer. The Wizards were unbelievable in the first half. They were even better in the third quarter to begin. They opened up a 21-point lead. Everything was kind of pointing towards them, you know, handedly beating the Hornets yet again. But look, the Hornets have LaMelo. He's one of the top 10 players in this league this year, and he brought them back. He was great. Miles Bridges was pretty good. And they clawed back, and after being down 21, the Wizards just kind of couldn't figure out how to get their looks to fall at the clip that they were, and Charlotte made a big comeback. But it was answered by Jordan Poole, who was superb all night. 25 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, team high plus 12. And you know, when the going got tough, it was Poole down the stretch that the Wizards played through. You know, Charlotte retook the lead. I think at this point it was, what was it, 10, I think 107 or 108 to 107 Charlotte. Was it? Yeah. And Charlotte gets the ball, right? They miss. Wizards come down. I think there's about 55 seconds left at this point in the game. And to me, this was the play of the game. Obviously, Jordan Poole with the game winner. We'll talk about that in a second. But you had a possession where you have a miss from Poole. The ball is on the floor. I think it's at like the left block, and Bilal Coulibaly is probably at the right wing of the 3-point line. He sprints across the court, dives face first into the floor to grab the ball, passes it to Brogdon, who misses the bunny, misses the layup at the rim, but Alex Saar is there to tip it in for the lead with about 50 seconds left. I think actually there might have been less time on the clock at this point, but nonetheless, that happens, and they called basket interference. Wizards challenged it. Obviously, the ball was not in the cylinder. They win the challenge. Saar tips it in, but that was a huge, huge play from Bilal, hustle play. Alex Saar there on the boards. He's been great on the boards as of late, and the Wizards take the lead. I think it was 109 to 108. And then after that, Charlotte. I think there's like sub 20 seconds left. 15, I think. Charlotte runs a really quick inbounds play. Nice pick and roll, finds they're big at the rim for a dunk, and they retake the lead 110 to 109. So really good play by them. And the Wizards got to come back out. They need a good play, and I literally tweeted this out. I was like, you know, who does the last shot go to? Because at that point, Jordan Poole, for all his great counting stats, you know, 25 points, 6 rebounds, all that, inefficient at that. I think he was finished 5 of 15 from 3, which is not good. That's 33%. Especially on that high of a clip, it's not superb by any means. And so I tweeted out, like, where do you go with the game on the line here? Because there's just, you want to go to pool, obviously, but. And you know it's going to Poole. And that's what I tweeted out. Like, who gets the shot here? You got to think it's Poole. Just hope it's not another deep step back three. Because at that point, Jordan Poole had been taking a lot of deep step back threes for the last 3 to 4 minutes. And even throughout the game, that's kind of how Charlotte got back. Because in the beginning, he was making them. And then he stopped making them. And Charlotte made a run. And then even at the end, when he was still not making them, and credit to Jordan Poole, he never lacks confidence. He kept shooting them. And eventually one fell, but even to that point, he had taken some terrible, terrible shots down the stretch. So I stand by that take. I don't know if that's really the shot that I wanted, but it seemed like Brian Keefe got the matchup he wanted against Josh Green. Jordan Poole seemed to like the matchup he got against Josh Green. Took him in, stepped in between the legs, step back three. Wasn't really a step back. It was kind of like a between the legs into like a rhythm top of the key three, but he drilled it. He drilled it. Clutch shot. And Jordan Poole's been pretty clutch to his credit this season. But clutch a shot, obviously, for the Wizards, I think, honestly, as well, all season. To give a 112 to 110 lead. And it's cool. It's cool to see Jordan Poole be that guy because right now, that's been the thing with the Wizards is you have all of these really good young players and Sar, Coulibaly, Bob, George, and all that, but you don't have that guy. Like, you're not really going to any of them offensively when the game is on the line. Maybe Bob at some point later down the line. But Jordan Poole has been that guy. He's still only 25 too. So that was cool to see. He drills it for the lead, and then Charlotte comes down. Wizards get a stop. Make one or two free throws, win 113 to 110. And kind of go from there with that. And after that, it was cool because the Wizards for the longest time, honestly, since that 2-2 start, and then they lost however many games it was. I think it was 17 in a row or something like that, 18 in a row. This is the first time that they weren't the worst team in the league, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing because you have a New Orleans team that is really injured and maybe could rival the Wizards for the worst team based on how injured they are. But that's cool, I guess, for the Wizards if you're a member of the team to not be the worst team anymore. And granted, the Wizards to that point, well, I mean, I can just say this now after the two Knicks games because I can update it. The Wizards versus the Hornets and Hawks this season, 4-1. The Wizards are 1-24 versus everyone else. So you have a lot of people that'll post like, for instance, like the Sixers or some team that's like hot right now, and you see they beat like the Blazers, the Spurs, the Wizards. They beat like the you know, the bottom of the barrel teams. The Wizards are kind of like that for the Hawks and Hornets. I don't know why they have their number. And granted, they beat the Hawks two times at the beginning of the season when the Hawks really didn't know what they were doing. And if you watch the Hawks play any basketball the last couple weeks, they are rolling. I think they're 17 and 15. Like they're a good, competent basketball team. And you saw that the third time around when they defeated the Wizards, they killed them in Atlanta. So I don't know if those two games were a fluke, but nonetheless, the Wizards, if they just play the Hornets and Hawks every game, like they'd be the best team ever, maybe. But again, great showing in Charlotte, a team that I thought they should have beat, but you know, took care of business and you know took them out from being the worst team in the league. Like I said, a couple plays, the Bilal Coulibaly diving head first kind of shows exactly what Bilal is about, just making the extra hustle plays, playing both ends of the floor, doing everything really, and that was really great to see from him. Great hustle from him there. Finished with 20 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Like I said, in December, ever since December 8th, honestly, has been when Bilal started to take off. So really cool to see that. You obviously have the Jordan Poole go ahead three. Josh Giampaolo as well grabbed a tough rebound when the Hornets missed after the Wiz took the lead. Made one or two free throws. He's been superb. More on Justin Giampaolo later. But that's the Charlotte game. A really good quality win for Washington. And just, you know, good all around vibes to kind of pick up a win. Because you never want to just lose and lose and lose and lose. You need some of these wins to keep everyone going. But I thought they played very well against Charlotte. And for how well I thought they played against Charlotte, the first game they played against the Knicks, a 136 to 132 overtime loss, not only easily, it probably should have been a win, but was probably the best I've seen them play all year, complete four quarters, which is crazy considering that Jordan Poole was out. He injured his side after taking a hard fall on a drive against Charlotte. Stayed in the game, but missed the game against the Knicks. Missed actually the next two games against the Knicks. And then Kuzma was also still out for this game. And yet, you know, the Knicks had everybody. I don't think the Knicks had one injury. All their guys played 45 plus minutes, and yet Washington was in control until the final seconds of the fourth quarter. And I don't really know how. But honestly, I think it was just they played their own style. They played fast. They played tough. They didn't really defend, but they don't you really defend anyway. Their shots just kind of fell. They were really good from 3-point range. I think shot 14 to 29 from three in the first half, and that's kind of why they got out to their lead. But look, they were ahead by four at the end of the first quarter, tied at 60 at half, leading after the third. And look, you never expected the Wizards to win this game. You just wanted them to be semi-competitive. And honestly, even if they got blown out without Poole and Kuzma against the full healthy Knicks squad that had at that point won nine straight, you never would have blinked an eye. You would never would have been disappointed. But yet there they were in control and probably should have won this game. You can't talk about this game without talking about Justin Champagne, who somehow is still on a two-way deal. The Wizards have been known last year to convert these guys to standard deals. I mean, look at Jared Butler. And they haven't yet for Champagne. Maybe they're just milking the two-way contract as long as they can, but this is the guy that deserves it. And I tweeted this out during the game that, Justin Champagne should have a standard NBA deal just sitting at his locker, waiting for him to sign after the game. Because if you watched him against New York that first game and you didn't think he was a 15-man roster player, when you employ guys like Patrick Baldwin Jr., who doesn't play, Johnny Davis, who doesn't play, I mean, they barely play Jared Butler anymore. But Champagne's been starting the last seven games. I don't know why he has. He's. I think, and this might be a hot take, I think Champagne's easily been a top five player on this roster this season. And he really only started playing the last couple games, but I don't really care. I think he's been that good. Career high, 31 points. And that's not even the kicker. 13 of 15 from the field. Are you kidding? Do you know how hard that is to go 13 of 15 from the field in an NBA game? That's super. That's unheard of efficiency. 13 of 15. And it's not like he's just like a big man who's a merchant for layups and dunks and tip backs. Like, he's scoring from all three levels. He was 5 of 6 from 3. 5 of 6 from 3. I mean, it was the game of his career. He was so good. Down the stretch, made back-to-back threes in the fourth quarter to keep him afloat. Was that guy down the stretch? Just I can't say enough about how great he was. Earns a standard NBA contract. Should continue to start even when Kuz gets back. I'd play him at the three. He's been this good. So really, really impressed with what I saw from Champagne. Bob looked really comfortable and poised down the stretch. He made some tough shots. Drew a clutch mid-range jumper in OT. Made a layup in OT. Like, he was efficient. He was great. 8 of 13 from the field, 17 points, 5 boards, 5 assists. Really great night for Bob. And look, the Wizards had it. They had it in their grasp. They were up 5 with about a minute 13 left. And then you get Brunson, who it's a foul. I get it, it's a foul. But it's the most infuriating foul when they bring the ball all the way to their knee, swipe it across their body, and like go into the defender's hands that I guess are hand checking them out, and it's a foul. And like here's my thing, right? I do think that is a foul by rule. I get it. And you can't fault Brunson or anybody that does it, like Harden, because again, it's never the player's fault. With the flopping and all that, I've maintained this. It's never the players' fault. The players are going to play to win the game. The refs are going to call it the way they do. The NBA, it's on the NBA to set the precedent on what's a foul and what's not a foul. But here's my thing with that, where you swipe the ball and it's a foul. Is that not an unnatural shooting motion? Because from where I'm from, I don't think anybody starts with the ball at their knee and then swipes it from the other side of their body and then shoots the ball. You don't do that. It's the same thing as if I get somebody in the air and I fully step into them and then shoot the ball. Again, it's not a foul, and that's the precedent they've set. So why is it a foul when I take it the ball from where I usually shoot it to my left knee, swing it across violently to my right knee? I'm not even doing anything to like it doesn't help me shoot the ball better. It doesn't help in any way. I'm literally seeking their hands. Their hands might not be in the best spot, but I'm still like putting the ball in front of me, swiping it into their hands, into their space, and then shooting the ball. I don't think it should be a foul. I think it is a foul by rule, and that's how they're calling it. So I'm not mad that they called it. I'm mad that it is a foul in general. Like it shouldn't, you shouldn't be able to take it to your left, swipe it to your right from your knee, and then that's a foul automatically. I'm sorry, I just think it's stupid. And I don't think that's anybody, that's what anybody wants to watch. Like the amount of foul calls is just ridiculous at this point. And you can see it even more on tanking teams like the Wizards because there is favorability in the league. Like guys like Jalen Brunson and Cat are going to get more foul calls than Bob Carrington and Alex Saar. And that's number one because they're veterans and they know how to draw fouls. But it's number two because it's kind of like, oh, well, Jalen Brunson missed this. Oh, he's not going to really miss layups. That's probably a foul. Same with Cat. And that's kind of how the game goes. And so that was really frustrating. Jalen Brunson does that against Keyshawn George, gets the and one, makes a free throw. Now it's a 2-point game. The Wizards come down, they miss. Again, you saw it down the stretch. The Wizards didn't have that go-to guy. No Jordan Poole, no Kyle Kuzma. You really didn't have the guy. Champagne was great, but when the going got tough, they took him away. And yet, you know, Bilal couldn't get you a bucket. Bub really didn't get the ball when the game was on the line. I wish he would have because he was great. But the Wizards didn't have that guy, and the Knicks did. I mean, Jalen Brunson's one of the clutchest players in the league, and then comes back down with about 10 seconds left and drills another floater to give him, I think, 49 or something, which is unheard of. And then the Wizards went to Bilal with the game on the line. I think the play was for a dribble handoff from to Champagne, who came out of the corner. They denied it. Credit to Deuce McBride for that. Bilal kind of was in no man's land inside the 3-point line, kind of turned like 2 seconds left, shot a front rim jumper. Not a great look, again, but I think Bilal could have done a little bit more in creating for himself. And the Knicks actually got a shot with like a second left and had a great look. Saar blocked it. Unheard, you know, not talked about a lot, but good defensive play there from Saar to force OT. And then, I mean, in overtime, you just kind of knew once the Wizards didn't steal this one in regulation, it was kind of over. And it was. I mean, Brunson took over in overtime, 55 points, 9 assists. Just, I didn't get why the Wizards were switching everything. So it would be like Saar out on the perimeter on Brunson. I don't know why the Wizards wouldn't just be like, take the three. Because Brunson was like bringing Saar out to the 3-point line and getting inside and shielding him. And then it's just, what do you want Saar to do when he's on his back? At that point, you have no rim protection. Saar's on his back, and it's over. And so he kind of took over in overtime. Again, this is kind of like the perfect loss for the Wizards. You know, Bilal Coulibaly played well. He had 18. Bob Carrington had 17. Saar had 13 and 5. Champagne with a career high 31. And people forget Champagne's only 23. I saw that a lot when I tweeted this out. Like he's a, you know, 23 years old because people kind of thought he was older and didn't really fit the timeline. But like, why? Why can't he fit the timeline? He's only 23 years old. Like, seriously, might be one of the better players, if not one of the top players in this young core already. You know, 31 points, 10 rebounds on 13 of 15 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3, and 2 steals. Like, why wouldn't that be considered good by any stretch of the imagination? You had a really good showing overall from the young core despite the loss. Champagne, 31 and 10. Coulibaly 18, 6 and 6, Bub 17, 5 and 5, George 13, 3 and 3. I thought this was a really solid game from George. 13, 3 and 3 won't jump off the board at all. But if you watched him on defense, he was clamps. He was guarding 1 through 4. He was everywhere on both ends. And really good game for him. And then I mentioned Saar with 13 and 5. So that was, you know, really good effort. And a perfect loss. You know, young guys play well. You really should have won the game. You just didn't have enough down the stretch. And the Knicks came in and they took a game that the Wizards probably should have won if they had more experience and better talent. But again, they lost. They kind of need to lose because the Pelicans are making it a little tough on them. But nonetheless, really good, solid showing. And on top of that, and this is what I want to talk about now before we even get into the second Knicks game. That night, we had some trade buzz going on. Mark Stein, an NBA reporter, he has his own Substack. I'd recommend checking it out. He reported, I think, Saturday or Friday, that the Wizards are actively exploring trade options for Kyle Kuzma. This was nothing new. I mean, people had known that they, you know, the Wizards were seriously shopping Kuzma for the last couple weeks. But what Stein also reported that I feel like was new, was that Kuzma is seeking a move following the Wizards' rough start to the season. So basically saying Kyle Kuzma has requested a trade, or if he didn't request it, has hinted like I'd prefer to be moved by February. And you wouldn't think anything of it. Obviously, it's just reporting. And Mark Stein is a reliable source. But at the same time, unless Kuzma comes out and say it, unless like Shams, I guess, I think most people are hesitant. The same thing with Woj, to kind of say that it's truthful. But when Kyle Kuzma's mom, Carrie, quote tweets the report and says, "I'll sit this right here," period, I feel like without saying like this is confirmed and this is true, Carrie kind of confirmed it right there. And look, I'm not her. I don't know if that's what she was trying to do, but I mean, you look at the situation, you look at her words, "I'll sit this right here," and you tell me that that's not her basically saying, "Look, I'm just gonna leave this right here. Like, this is true. We want him gone." That kind of makes it seem like it is. And look, I put out a tweet, I screenshotted it, and I said, "On top of the Wizards' hard-fought loss tonight, Kyle Kuzma's mom, Carrie, appeared to confirm Mark Stein's report of Kyle Kuzma wanting out of DC." And Carrie's liked a lot of my stuff. And I don't know if she follows me, but I know like it's possible that she saw this. It's possible that like Kuz saw this, and they didn't like quote tweet it. They didn't say this like what I said was untrue. And now I said appeared. Like I didn't say this was a fact, but there really wasn't any pushback from what I said on my tweet. And if you look at the comments, it's 75 people basically saying, "Good, we don't really want Kyle Kuzma in DC." Some comments more colorful than others. You know who you are. But it's for the last like 3 months, it's been Wizards fans turning and honestly since the season started, they don't want Kyle Kuzma in DC. The consensus among Wizards fans is I don't care what we get, anything is feasible because it opens up minutes for Bilal. And it's been no secret that Bilal has been so much better without Kuz. It's no secret Champagne's blossomed without Kuz. Bub and all them have gotten more looks without Kuz. And so if he's not a part of your timeline, you're hindering the development of your young guys by keeping him. You should have gone 2 first-round picks when you could. That's off the table. You could, I think, got 1 first-round pick last year for Dallas. You asked Kyle Kuzma if he wanted to go. I guess that's a good culture building thing. He said no because, and remember, this is the funny part about it. Kyle Kuzma went out and could have gotten dealt to Dallas last February before the Wizards traded Gafford. But remember, he basically vetoed that trade. He doesn't have no trade clause, but he's like, "I don't want to go to Dallas for 2 reasons. Number one, I still want to build here in DC," which I thought was bullshit at the time. And I still think it's bullshit. But the second was he didn't think Dallas was a real contender. He wanted to go to an actual team that he thought would win. And it's funny because, again, as you know, Dallas went on to go to the NBA Finals and obviously lost to Boston. But clearly they were the best contender out West. And he didn't go. And that was a missed opportunity for Washington. So obviously you get Daniel Gafford and you send him there and you get George back. But feels like a missed opportunity because honestly, Kyle Kuzma has not been good this season. He's only averaging 15 points per game, I think 5.6 rebounds per game. He's shooting an inefficient 42% from the field. And when you look at his stats, like from previous seasons, it's kind of like averaging career lows in a lot of areas. I mean, if you look, the last time that he averaged, let me find his averages for each season. I mean, yeah, like he hasn't averaged this low since like his first couple seasons in LA. He had been very good for a while. And now he's back down to 15 points. The last time was 2019, or sorry, 2020, 2021 in the bubble when he was a six man. He averaged 13 points per game. Since then, for the Wizards, it was 17, 21, 22. Clearly, steadily building. And then you get to this season, he's averaging, 15 points per game, shooting the worst field goal percentage of his career in DC. The worst 3-point percentage at 26.2% of his career in DC. The worst free throw percentage at 64%. Like, it's just regression. And for a guy that's 29 years old, I get he's on a good contract, but he's been terrible. Especially, he's your number one option. He's been awful. Really inefficient as well. He's probably not averaging 15 points unless he's taking all those shots. So again, been injured a lot as well. So I don't know if you can easily get one first round pick at least for Kyle Kuzma still. But the two first round picks is out the window. That there's no way Washington gets that type of value for Kuz. If they do, if they get two first round picks, then build a statue for Will Dawkins, because I don't know who in their right mind, maybe a desperate Kings team, maybe a desperate Lakers team would. But if the Lakers aren't giving up a first round pick for Dorian Finney-Smith, why would the Wizards get one for Kuz, who I think is a less valued asset, a way worse defender, worse 3-point shooter. All you can really do is maybe score one on one better than DFS. But other than that, I'm taking DFS, and they got 3 seconds and not a one. So if you're a Wizards fan, you need a one. You'll take a one, and I think all Wizards fans kind of want Kuz out, and they were like, "Good, like we don't. This isn't news, Carrie. Like for most Wizards fans, they want Kyle Kuzma gone. They're kind of tired of the bullshit, and you know, oh, Kyle Kuzma requested a trade. Like we it's mutual. That's kind of the precedent from Wizards fans. It's mutual. You want gone, we want you gone. Let's work on getting you gone. Let's work on finding you a new home." And so I think he will. I think Kyle Kuzma, the writing's on the wall. He'll be dealt. I think the Wizards just kind of got to hope that him being back from this rib injury, it might take him a two, you know, 2 or 3 games. He didn't come off. He didn't start against the Knicks in his return. He came off the bench, played 20 minutes, had 9 points on 4 of 9 from the field. So not bad, but they got to hope he kind of turns it on here, because he's got to build up that trade value real quick. February is approaching. He's got about a month and change. So that's kind of how I feel about the rumors. It's clear like he wants gone. The Wizards want him gone. The Wizards fans want him gone. It's time to work on a deal that works for both sides. And like I mentioned, team friendly deal. He's making 22 this year, and then it's 19 and 17 the next 2 years. So it's really easy to trade him. And it is not even bad if a team takes his contract on the last 2 years, because he's making sub $20 million, which is good value when Kuzma's playing the way that Kuzma should play as a third or fourth option. So, moving on, I want to talk about another guy, Bilal Coulibaly, this December. Since December 8th, 19 points per game, 6 rebounds, 4.5 assists. That's superb. That's exactly what you want from Bilal Coulibaly. And not to mention, his defense has been stellar, taking on the best player on the opposing team, that assignment, defending 1 through 4. Can't say enough about him efficiently as well. He's shooting the ball well. 1 of 10 performance last game out against the Knicks. Not great. But you know, until that point, had been absolutely cooking. He has as many 20-point games in 1 week as he did his entire rookie season, which is 2. So you can just see, like, he's building. And what's great about Bilal, and I don't want to harp on him too much, is if you remember last season, his rookie year, he had a great first 15 games, was shooting like 39% from three. And then he kind of fell off the face of the earth. Really inefficient numbers, not scoring the ball well, really not even looking at the rim. All he was a great defender. And then broke his wrist, obviously. And you get to this season, he has a great first 10 games. And then a terrible, terrible, terrible next 10 games. You're like, is this what we're going to get again? Is it going to be a great start for Bilal? And then he just kind of stops playing the way that Bilal should play. And that happened until December 8th. And then he started figuring it out again. He started taking better shots, more efficient, scoring 20 points per game. He had a game of 27 in there against Cleveland, 6.5 rebounds. The way he's seeing the floor at 5 assists per game over the last 8 games is so good. And so it's great to see that while he kind of got knocked back again, he got back up. He figured out, like, this is how I got to counter. This is how I got to get better. This is how I got to figure out my shooting slump. And instead of letting it derail his season, he figured things out, and he's back on track as a, you know, a really important piece to the Wizards. And that's obviously great to see. So Bilal was great. Alex Sarr, let's talk about that real quick. Easily his best month of his career, and you'll see that every month will probably be the best month of his career for the next couple months, because he's just slowly building. 44% from three over his last 10 games. And that's not Jordan Poole. That's not Corey Kispert. That's Alex Sarr. That's your 19-year-old rookie who was shooting 19% from three over the first 10 games, who couldn't find the basket in summer league. That's Alex Sarov's last 10 games, shooting 44% from three. And it's not, I want to say this specifically, it is not on like a 4 of 11 clip. He's shooting a lot of threes. He shot, was it 20? I think 20 of 44 from three over that last 10 game stretch. He shot 45% from three in December. So like if we're being completely transparent here, I don't know how you can make an argument for the rookie of the year without mentioning Alex Saar as the top candidate right now. And that might be a little hometown bias, but I don't really know how you can, and I understand like a lot of people think it should be Yves Missi from the Pelicans, and like I get that, but I just I they're terrible as well. And I think Alex Saar does a lot more on the defensive side of the ball versus Missy, and that's kind of why I have him above him. But this is Alex Saar in the month of December, right? 13.5 points, 6.3 rebounds, 2.1 assists per game, 2 blocks per game on 45% from three as a 7 foot 19-year-old center. I mean, come on. Those obviously aren't all-star, all-NBA numbers by far, but for a guy in like his just who's played 30 career NBA games, like for how bad he was in summer league, to see how far he's come, really good for his development, and for where he is overall. So really, really cool to see Alex Saar figuring things out from three. And it's funny because I'm pretty sure in the month of December, Alex Saar, I saw someone tweet this, I forget who. So if you know who you are, Alex Saar has more field goals made in the month of December, I think 3-point field goals made, than Reed Sheppard has career field goals made. And I get it, like it's hard because Reed Sheppard doesn't play as much, but at the same time, like he does play. And he hasn't been efficient in his numbers, and I'm just saying this because I had a lot of people telling me that he should have been the pick. Look, Alex Saar has been superb. Reese Hoshea shooting, I think, 28% from three, which is funny because he was touted as this elite shooter coming out of the draft, really efficient guy. And on the season, he's shooting worse than Alex Saar from deep, who obviously isn't touted at all as the 3-point guy. I mean, yes, so Reese Hoshea is at 29%. Saar's at 32%, and you got to figure out this is after shooting 19% the first 10 games. Imagine he had shot the clip he's shooting now. That's kind of the funny thing when you compare them. So again, really, really great Alex Saar rookie year so far. He's got a long way to go, not even halfway there. But that's cool to see that he's figuring it out from deep. That's the thing with Bilal and Saar and Bob. Like you just see that they're getting better. They're getting more comfortable. They are gradually finding their way, and that's what this rebuild is about. It's not about wins and losses. It's about the young guys, the development of the young guys, and how they're progressing. And so far, they're all progressing at a really steady clip. That's great to see. So now on to the tank standings. That's a staple of this pod. There's a new number one, and it's not great for Wizards fans in the tank, but it's nice to see that they're building a little bit. They're no longer the worst team in the NBA. That title belongs to the New Orleans Pelicans, who are one of the worst teams. I've been watching a lot of Pelicans games, and let me tell you, like, they are one of the most injury-prone teams ever. And this isn't a year-off thing. Every year, they're injured. And it doesn't help when you have Zion, one of the most injury-prone players of all time. B.I., who's very injured. Dejounte Murray, always injured. McCollum, always injured. Like, it is their fault for believing that all these injury-prone players could somehow go through an 82-plus game season and not all get injured at the same time. They are 5-28. No one expected them to be this bad, but they are. And they're getting healthy. I mean, Murray and McCollum are back. Zion is now practicing with contact. I don't know about BI, but I mean, they realistically should have beat the Nuggets the other night. They folded and lost in OT. Should have beat the Clippers. They lost in regulation by three. Like, they're competitive. They're getting healthy. And so you got to hope that once they get some big pieces back, that they start to string a couple wins together. But they're 5-28. Washington is the second worst team at 5-25. And then you got 3 7-win teams. You got the 7-25 Raptors and Hornets. You got the 7-24 Jazz.
And so look, while the Wizards are so bad, they're 5-25, like they win a couple games, like you see, and they are right back to the 4 or 5 spot. So again, for all the team people that said we don't know if they're gonna be as bad as they need to be, just look, they're 5-25 through 30 games. They are abysmal. It just so happens that the Pelicans are somehow worse. So you obviously you want to be the worst possible team, record wise. And it's funny because you have those 7 win teams and below, but then you got the Blazers right after that at 11-21. So from 5 to 6, in terms of the worst teams, there's a 4-win gap. So look, the Wizards, I don't even know if they'll win 11 games all year. I think they're easily going to be a bottom 5 team. It's just a matter of like the Raptors, Hornets, and Jazz figuring things out, and winning some games, because it's kind of like there's 5 really, really, really bad teams, and the rest of the league is a little bit separation from that. And what's big for Washington is, look, they have Chicago at home, who I think is terrible, but again, they're pretty healthy, and they beat Washington by 31 last time in DC. So they clearly have the Wizards number. I would expect the Bulls to win that game. And if that happens, you're looking at, I would assume the Pelicans lose. I think they're at Miami before this. The 5-29 Pelicans versus the 5-26 Wizards. The true tank bowl. And what's great about it is we get 2 games back to back. Not just one, but 2 games back to back of the 2 worst teams in the league. The first game's at New Orleans, January 3rd. And the second game is, I think, at Washington on January 5th. So the 2 biggest games of the season so far. And look, as much as I always say you don't want to root for losing, it's not fun to root for losing. Like, the Wizards probably should lose this game, especially the first one in New Orleans, and would be to their full benefit, being transparent here, would be their full benefit to lose both of these games. Because if that happens, you got the Pelicans at 7-29, the Wizards at 5-20, I think 5-28 at that point, and the Wizards are solidifying themselves as the clear worst team in the league. And they only play the Pelicans twice, so they I don't think they would hold that tiebreak. I think I don't know if the tiebreak for that is head to head, but that would be big. And then after the home and home against the Pels, they have Houston at home. Houston's been playing great lately. They haven't been playing great, but they're a great team, and they're going to probably kill the Wizards because they beat them pretty handily in Houston. And that's kind of look at the next 4 games. So look, at 5-25 right now, Washington is by no means a good basketball team. But they're not the worst, which is crazy. I didn't really touch on the second Knicks game, but it was kind of a blowout. Wizards played well in the beginning. Still no Poole, but Kuz returned. And then the second half, they kind of got blitzed. So look, it wasn't really much to talk about. Sarr at 18. 3-6 from 3. So he was great. Brogdon at 18 as well. But nothing else to report. Bob Carrington took a really nasty fall. I think he got kneed to the head. Didn't return. They called it post-traumatic headache. Keefe said he's going to be okay, but I don't know how long he's going to be out. He's probably concussed. But other than that, that's kind of going to do it for this episode. You know, win against Charlotte, pool game winner. Then you got the Knicks game, and it sucks. The Hornets game, obviously the Hornets have no fans, but the crowd was electric. It was a really fun crowd. Poole mentioned it post game. Seemed like it was a really cool game to be at. But then you get to the Knicks game, and it's probably 65-35 Knicks fans, and I get it. Like, the Knicks are on a 10-game win streak. They're great. They're going to be a contender. The Wizards are one of the worst teams in the league, but it's just always terrible when the crowd pop for a Knicks clutch three is bigger than a crowd pop for the Wizards. And when the Wizards are at the line, it seems like it's 10 times louder at their home than it is on the road. And if you're Ted Leonsis, you got to be sitting there just like, if that doesn't piss you off as an owner, then I don't know what will. And this isn't a shot at Ted by any means. It's just kind of like a look, dude, your home is continuously getting taken over by visiting fans. And that's going to happen over the course of a rebuild. But at some point, you can't let that slide. Like, that's gotta, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing when your players are shooting free throws and it is as loud as it would be as if you were at the Garden in your own home. Like, that's gotta be embarrassing for all parties. And so you never like to see that. And the Knicks have great fans, and they have fans everywhere. Probably a bunch of bandwagons too, but you didn't like to see that after it was great against Charlotte. So never want to see opposing fans take over your arena, but nonetheless, the Wizards are kind of used to it. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate it all for listening. We're trying to get this weekly again. So hopefully you've been enjoying the uploads. After this, in terms of the future, next episode will probably be after this 3-game stretch against Chicago, and then the home and home against the Pelicans. A lot can change for the course of the Flag to DC or the Harper to DC discourse, depending on what happens over these next 3 games, especially the New Orleans game. So keep an eye out for that. We'll be back with our top five big board as well next week. And yeah, that's gonna do it for this episode. Appreciate all you guys for listening. And yeah, go Wiz.